Hey everyone, welcome to another deep dive. Today we're heading to 19th century France.
Ooh, France.
Yeah. Specifically Lyon, you know, the silk capital.
Oh, yes. Of course, the silk.
So we're going to use the story of this guy, Claude Joseph Bonnet.
Okay.
He was a really successful silk manufacturer.
Interesting.
And we'll kind of see how his life intersects with like all these huge changes that were going on at the time.
Yeah, like the Industrial Revolution and
exactly, you know, like worker uprisings and yeah, the rise of factories, you know, all that stuff.
It's amazing how you can look at one person's life and see all these global shifts happening right there.
Right. It's like a magnifying glass or something.
Exactly. And our main source for this deep dive is this chapter called Masters and Workers.
Yeah, it's like packed with info about Bonnet,
okay,
his business, his relationship with his workers, and he even gets into how he handled these like super intense worker uprisings.
Wow.
Seriously, imagine this. In 1846, Bonnet had 1,100 weavers. Yeah. Working for him in Lyon alone.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
I know, right? And they were all these home-based weavers called Canuts.
Canuts.
Yeah, Canuts. It's a cool name, right?
Yeah. It is. And that just shows how central this whole home-based system was to the silk industry there.
Right. But it was also like right on the cusp of changing to factories.
Yeah.
Like a total transformation.
And Bonnet was right there in the middle of it all.
Yeah. And to make things even more interesting, his career kind of coincides with two major worker uprisings in Lyon.
Oh, wow.
1831 and then again in 1834.
Okay.
So you can like really feel the tension building as you read about this period.
I bet. You know, those uprisings weren't just random events, though.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Like, there were deep economic and social problems driving them.
Oh, okay.
You have to imagine these workers fighting for basic stuff like a minimum wage.
Right.
And they weren't even allowed to form unions legally.
Wow.
Then on top of that, you've got accusations of manufacturers stealing silk from the workers.
So there was, like, zero trust.
Exactly. And then the gap between how much the employers were making compared to the workers.
Oh, yeah. I bet that didn't help.
Not at all. It was like a powder keg waiting to explode.
Wow. So the source material really gets into the events leading up to that first uprising in 1831.
Okay.
Like, especially these meetings they had.
Meetings.
Yeah, between the workers and the employers.
Oh, okay.
They were trying to set a minimum wage.
Oh, so like negotiations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And guess what? Bonnet was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in the end, he refused to sign the agreement.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. What do you think was going through his mind?
I don't know. It seems like a really tough spot to be in.
Yeah.
Like, on the one hand, you have these workers barely scraping by.
Right.
But on the other hand, Bonnet had to think about his business, too.
True. And with all the pressure on the silk industry at the time.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think was most important to him in that moment?
Well, I'm sure profit was a big factor.
Yeah.
But he might have also been thinking about the precedent it would set.
What do you mean?
Like, if he gave in to the workers' demands this time,
yeah,
what would stop them from asking for more later?
Hmm, that's a good point.
You have to remember, back then, employers held most of the power.
Right. So anyway, whatever his reasons were, that 1831 uprising was a total mess.
Oh, really?
Workers took over the city for a bit.
Oh, wow.
The government had to step in.
Uh-huh.
And it ended pretty brutally.
That's intense. It's a good reminder of how imbalanced things were back then.
Definitely. And it's crazy how history can be spun, you know?
Yeah.
The source actually has this account that makes Bonnet look like a hero.
A hero?
Yeah, for standing up to what they call the sovereign people.
Oh, come on.
I know, right? It's so obviously biased. Mm. Probably meant to make him look good.
You always have to consider who's telling the story and why.
Exactly. Now, after that 1831 uprising, we start to see worker associations popping up.
Okay.
And mutual aid societies, too.
Interesting.
They were really smart about it, though.
How so?
Like, there are all these laws against unions, but they found ways to work around them.
Clever.
Yeah. And they started putting pressure on employers to pay better wages.
Makes sense.
You could even say they were part of what led to that even bigger uprising in 1834.
Oh, yeah. That one was bad.
Yeah. The source doesn't hold back on the details either.
Like, how bad was it?
Intense fighting. The authorities came down hard.
Mm.
It was rough. And here's something I found really interesting.
What's that?
Bonnet actually testified against one of the workers who was involved in the 1834 uprising.
Oh, wow. So he definitely sided with the employer.
Yeah. It shows where his loyalties were.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting because the source talks about how everyone was really into economic liberalism during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it points out this total hypocrisy.
What do you mean?
Like these manufacturers, they'd use these liberal ideas
yeah.
to justify not giving workers any rights.
Yeah.
But then they turn around and ask for government help when it benefited them.
Oh, so convenient.
I know, right? Yeah. It's like they picked and chose which parts of the ideology they liked.
It happens all the time.
Right. But then you read this story from a letter Bonnet wrote to his father around 1814.
Okay.
And he sounds genuinely concerned about his workers.
Really?
Yeah. Times were tough. And he actually offered to pay them in potatoes instead of wages.
Potatoes?
Yeah, because food was more important than money at that point.
Wow. That's...
I know. It kind of makes you feel for him a little bit.
Yeah. Well...
But it also makes you wonder, was he really trying to help or was it just a smart business move?
That's a tough one. Was it compassion or just pragmatism?
Exactly. It's hard to know for sure.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to 1848, and things get crazy again.
What happened?
These religious workshops pop up.
Workshops?
Yeah, they were called Providences.
Oh, yeah.
And the workers were furious because they were driving down wages.
Oh, I bet.
They even threatened Bonnet's factory in Jujuria.
Seriously?
Yeah. And there's this crazy story, like local legend in Jujuria, that Bonnet had to escape Lyon hidden inside a barrel.
Wait, what? A barrel?
I know, right? It sounds insane.
Yeah, it does.
But it shows how scared employers were at the time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Like, things must have been super tense for that story to even exist.
Absolutely. Then there's this whole Bonnet Looms thing.
What's that?
So workers destroyed a bunch of equipment.
Okay.
Because they thought it was going to Bonnet's factory in Jujuria.
So they were trying to sabotage him.
Yeah, but get this. Right. It was all a misunderstanding.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, the equipment wasn't even his.
Wow.
It just shows how much anxiety there was about competition from those rural looms.
Yeah, they were on edge.
Big time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how misinformation can play such a big role in these conflicts.
Right, and that's something that's still relevant today.
Totally. So to figure out what was really going on, a group of radical workers called the Vorices.
The Vorices.
Yeah, they decided to go to Bonnet's factory in Jujuria.
Oh, so they could see for themselves.
Exactly. And guess what?
Yeah.
They had to admit it wasn't nearly as big as they thought.
Oh, so they'd blown it out of proportion.
Yeah, basically. But that rural competition thing,
yeah.
That wasn't going away anytime soon.
How bad did it get?
By 1860, there were over twice as many silk looms outside Lyon as inside.
Wow. That must have been tough for the Lyon workers.
It was. They were seeing their jobs disappear.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The source even has this quote from a worker poster.
Okay.
From 1866.
Uh-huh.
And they call Bonnet the greatest villain for setting up looms in rural areas.
Wow. It's like they felt betrayed by him.
Totally. Especially after he'd tried to help them in the past.
Right. But then again, you have to consider the pressure Bonnet was under, too.
Yeah, of course.
He was trying to run a business.
Exactly. It's complicated. You can see both sides.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Not a simple good guy, bad guy situation.
Nope. Just a whole mess of competing interests and fears.
Right. And that's history for you.
Yeah.
It really shows how everything was connected. You know?
Yeah.
Like, one decision could have these huge ripple effects.
Totally. And the source actually mentions this attempt to, like, find a compromise.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In 1881, they formed this credit society,
and
Bonnet's grandsons helped fund it.
Interesting. What was it for?
It was supposed to support those small weaving workshops in Lyon.
Oh, so like try to keep that traditional way of life going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like trying to hold back a flood.
Oh, so it didn't really work.
Not really. The industry was changing too fast.
So what happened to those smaller workshops?
A lot of them just disappeared.
Oh, wow.
It was a tough time. But then you start to see these boarding factories popping up.
Boarding factories? What are those?
So basically, it was like a big building.
Okay.
Where workers would live and work all in the same place.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Bonnet's grandsons actually started one.
Oh, wow.
And there was another one run by someone close to the family.
So it was like a mix of the old and the new.
Right, like trying to hold on to some of that traditional craft.
Uh-huh.
But also adapting to the factory system.
But what was it like for the workers?
Well, it's hard to know for sure without hearing their side of the story, but I imagine it was a mixed bag.
Yeah, like some good, some bad.
Exactly. Some might have liked the stability and the support,
okay.
Like having housing and medical care provided, but others might have felt trapped or controlled.
Yeah, that their whole life was tied to the factory.
Exactly. And, you know, it's important to remember that the worker
yeah.
wasn't just one type of person.
Right. Everyone had their own experiences.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how the image of Croix-Rousse starts to change around this time.
Croix-Rousse.
Yeah. You know that district in Lyon where all the weavers were?
Uh-huh.
It used to be known for all those worker uprisings.
Right.
But now it was becoming more like a symbol of traditional craftsmanship.
Even though that way of life was fading away.
Exactly. It's kind of sad in a way.
Yeah, it is. So as we wrap up this look at Claude Joseph Barnett and the lion silk industry, what do you think his legacy is?
Well, he was definitely a smart businessman.
Yeah.
He survived all those uprisings and those economic changes.
He even started those bonus systems to encourage quality.
Right. He was always adapting. But what about his relationship with his workers?
Yeah. Like, did he actually care about them?
Well, the source tells this really interesting story about this workshop master named Gippet.
Gippet.
Yeah, he worked for Bonnet for over 20 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
It is. And it's like we get this close-up view of one worker's life.
Yeah.
Like we learn about his family, his living conditions, his finances.
So it's like a mini deep dive within our deep dive.
Exactly. And it also highlights the hierarchy within the silk industry.
Being.
Like Gippet was obviously skilled.
Yeah.
He was successful. But he wasn't wealthy like Bonnet or even the company clerks.
Oh, wow. So there were levels even within the working class.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder what Gippet thought of Bonnet.
Yeah. Like, did he respect him?
Right. Or was it just a purely business relationship?
Hmm. It's hard to know.
Well, there is this one detail that I find really fascinating.
What's that?
After Bonnet died,
right,
Gippet and 9 other workshop masters got together and they paid to have a bust of Bonnet made.
Wow, so they honored him.
They did, which suggests some level of respect, maybe even admiration.
That's really interesting.
And remember, this wasn't something Bonnet's family or the company organized.
So it was genuine.
Yeah, it came from the workers themselves.
Wow, so that adds another layer to this whole Bonnet legacy thing.
Totally. But at the same time, Bonnet wasn't exactly this revolutionary social reformer.
Right.
He was involved in those mutual aid societies.
Uh-huh.
He did some charitable work.
Yeah.
But he also benefited from a system that exploited workers.
That's true.
It's like he was both part of the problem and part of the solution.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It always is. You know, people are complex.
Right.
You can have conflicting beliefs and do things that seem contradictory.
Definitely. Especially when you're looking back at historical figures.
Exactly. It's never black and white.
It's like trying to put together a puzzle with missing pieces.
Yeah, you get the general idea.
Uh-huh.
But there are always going to be gaps.
So we end up with this kind of messy picture of Claude Joseph Bonnet.
Right.
He was innovative, pragmatic,
yeah,
even a bit paternalistic. Mm. Like he was just trying to navigate this crazy changing world.
And sometimes he made good choices.
And sometimes not so good.
Exactly. But that's what makes history so interesting.
Yeah. It's like you can't just put people in boxes.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're talking about someone from so long ago.
Right. Like we were saying, he did some good things.
Yeah.
Some not so good things.
It's all part of the story.
Exactly. And you know what really struck me about this whole deep dive?
What's that?
How relevant it feels today.
Really?
Yeah. Like we're still dealing with a lot of the same issues.
Right. Like what?
Well, think about it. We've got globalization.
Yeah.
People are still fighting for fair wages and working conditions.
Right.
And there's always that tension between keeping traditions alive and embracing new technology and progress.
It's like history is repeating itself in a way.
Yeah. But it's not just about the problems.
Okay.
It's also about those human emotions and desires.
What do you mean?
Like that hope for a better life, the fear of losing what you have.
Right.
Those are things that people have always felt.
I guess that's what makes history so relatable.
Exactly. It's not just about dates and events.
Yeah.
It's about understanding what it means to be human.
And how those basic human experiences connect us across time.
Totally. Yeah. So even though we've been talking about this one guy.
Claude Joseph Bonnet.
Right. Mm. We're really talking about all of us.
Wow. When you put it that way, it's kind of mind-blowing.
It is. And it's why I love history so much.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive.
It has. And I hope our listeners enjoyed it.
I think they did. We covered a lot of ground.
We did, from worker uprisings to the rise of factories to those complicated relationships between employers and workers.
But it feels like we've only scratched the surface.
We have. There's so much more to learn.
And that's the exciting part.
Exactly. History is like this endless journey of discovery.
So to everyone listening out there,
yeah,
thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of lion silk
and the life of Claude Joseph Bonnet.
We hope it's made you curious to learn even more.
And remember, history isn't just about the past.
It's about understanding the present and shaping the future.
Well said.